Welcome to the Artistic Foodies, the show that explores life through the lens of art and food. I'm Abbas Muhammad.
And I'm Irfan Raidan.
And today we're talking with Hollywood actor Rizwan Manji.
Rizwan Manji may be best known today for his portrayal of Ray Bhutani in the Emmy-winning TV show Schitt's Creek. You may also have seen him play Rajiv Gidwani, the scheming assistant manager of a call center, in the NBC comedy Outsourced, or as the janitor Jameel in the HBO series Peacemaker. He has also acted in Mr. Robot, Arrested Development, and Charlie Wilson's War. Keep an eye out for him in the upcoming Netflix comedy Wedding Season.
I've been watching you for a long time, and the first movie I saw you in was American Desi. I don't know if you remember
that. Time ago.
Years ago. Yeah, and Cal Penn was in one too. Yeah. So that was like the first, that was like in the late 1990s. It was like one of the first.
I think it released in 2001.
Oh, really?
We shot it in the late 90s, but I think it premiered. Like March, I remember because it was like 9/11 then, right after. So yeah, 2001.
I'm looking at the DVD cover. This is such a 90s aesthetic.
I know, it's so, it is very, it was very, yeah. 2001, but it was very 90s.
All the faces, a different hue, a different shade of color, all these haircuts. Oh, this is hilarious.
It was funny. The reason I remember that is because actually me and my friend who used to do video production.
Yeah.
He's originally Canadian too, but we were both at Berkeley at the time, and we were writing our own script about, this was 1998, about Pakistani American youth growing up in the Bay Area. So as a lot of the similar storylines was in that.
There was a bunch of movies that came out really within the like a 2 year span of that, which were dealing with the same issues. It was like a movie called ABCD, and then there was like American Chai, and you know, even like Bend It Like Beckham. It was like dealing with the same issues that all came out within the same couple of years.
And before we start, I just want to say what an honor it is, because I've been watching you my whole life. I'm 30, or as Irfan likes to say, I'm only 30.
Who's a baby?
From Outsourced, like Transformers. I think the most recent one I watched was The Tiger Hunter, you know, Lena Khan and all that stuff is great. And I don't watch it, but my wife watches Schitt's Creek. So she like completely flipped when she heard I was doing this. So, and you know, it's so funny. I'm looking at the American Desi poster trying to figure out which one is you, because without your mustache.
And it's funny because I had a goatee in the movie, but in the, I don't know which, because there's different covers. But if you're looking at the one with all the 9 photos, black and white one, there's like a bunch of black and white ones, but yeah, I look like my son in that photo.
That's hilarious. So there's like a pre-mustache era and then the mustache era, which is the era I was born into.
I recently did a post about the mustache, and I'm like, I think in Charlie Wilson's War, we were in Morocco and we shot a whole day of that scene. And then the next day, Mike Nichols comes into the trailer and says, you know, we have an expert on the Pakistani military, and we think that you should have a mustache. And so we're going to scrap the entire days of shooting, and the makeup department's going to put a mustache on you. And so then that was the first time I had ever done any, and it was a fake mustache. But then I was like, oh, maybe this works. And then I was like, oh, let me try. And then I started booking stuff and then outsourced. You know, they were like, you need a mustache. And then it was from there. I haven't been able to get really any work without a mustache.
So the mustache is as much as a part of you as your acting is.
I feel like it's the only thing that gets, it's not my acting. It's just the mustache.
I'm curious to know, like, let's dig into the origin story a little bit. So how did you get interested in acting? And, you know, when you were getting into it, did you see a lot of people like you? And you can define that as brown or Muslim or mustache, you know, however you want to define it.
I think the first time I remember thinking that this was a possibility of doing this as a career was in middle school, which we call junior high school in Canada. I got cast in a play. We were doing a play, a school play, and I got cast as the lead character in the play, and I had so much fun. And I think that when my parents came in for like a parent-teacher conference with, and the drama teacher, because we was like, you know, different teachers, and they saw the drama teacher, and she was like, look, there's a few people in this class that I think could do this as a career, and your son is one of them. And I was it was the first time that I was like, oh, this is a possibility and this could be a career. And so I continued like acting during like high school and all that stuff. I went to the University of Alberta for a year and then decided, you know, I wanted to go to acting school. But if you're asking me if I saw anybody like me doing it, there was, even at my school, there was a couple other South Asian students, one that I knew of that had graduated, one that was in the school with me at the time, my really good friend, Sean Krishnan. But there wasn't a lot of us, right? There just wasn't a lot of us in the business. And I personally didn't know any other Muslim, like South Asian actors that were doing it at the time. Soon after, I learned of Firdos Bamji and I learned of Asif Mandvi. Do you know what I mean? Like it came into the fold. But at that time I was like, oh, I don't know. There was people doing it, but there wasn't a lot of us doing it. So yeah, it did feel like uncharted territory in a way. It was daunting because we were like, how are we going to do this? But in a way it was challenging because you're like, hey, maybe we'll be the first ones to like do all this stuff. So it was a multiple of different feelings, starting out. Yeah.
Did you guys like ever get together and make a clique, like the Desi Hollywood Avengers, to like help each other succeed? Or was
no?
It solo,
yes, we
solo
did
stuff?
Actually. So I remember really early on there was her name is escaping me, but she was the woman who was in Suburbia with Firdos. I think her name was Salma. I'm not 100% certain, but she started this thing where I went to a meeting with other, it was just South Asian people in film. And it was just like a very initial thing. We had a meeting and we were sort of talking about the industry and the challenges and all that stuff. And then sort of nothing happened with that. But then me and my friend Purva Bedi, we started a theater company. Cause our, you know, initially my main goal was like, I wanted to do theater and I wanted to, you know, like do some South Asian work in theater. And we knew a lot of people who were like sort of writing and there was actors. And so we knew of a bunch of people, but we wanted to get them together. So me and my friend Purva, we started this theater company. We got some submissions of like South Asians who had written like one act plays. And we put together a showcase night that we were going to use to raise money to do a full length production. So we got a bunch of people together. It was sold out. There was people, it was an elevator situation. The elevator got stuck and there was so much interest. We didn't realize how much interest there was in this. And then what happened with that was we ended up having enough money to produce a show in New York by Shishir Kurup, who's a South Asian writer, actor. We did a play called On Caring for the Beast. So yeah, we were trying. And then the other theater companies, there was a theater company called Salam and Rising. And there was like a bunch of, we were trying to do things where we were not just competing with the one television job that we had, but we were trying to do something that we could collaborate with.
Was it ever competitive, you know, vying for the same roles? Or what was the vibe? What was the feeling back then?
There's no way to not be competitive. I know people are like, no, you know, there's parts, right? But there's no way to not be competitive. I'm being honest with you. When you go out and there was one really crappy role on The Sopranos that was a South Asian guy with an accent. And, you know, all like the 40 of us who were doing this in New York, we were all there, different ages. I mean, even I think they were different genders. I mean, I don't know what was happening, but for that one role, how do you not be competitive? You know what I mean? We try. Yeah. There was never any like, at least I feel on my end, there was no animosity, but there is competition. We were all fighting for that one thing. I think it's a lot better now. I think we're able to collaborate a lot more now because we're not fighting for the scraps anymore, you know?
Right. There's more roles. You don't have to be just the brown stereotype.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, that's what I'm saying. There is so much. There is so much now. I mean, we have a long way to go. I don't want to all of a sudden be like, la, 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 we're in fantasy land. But we are definitely better than we were 20 years ago, you know.
And now Rizwan is also in The Peacemaker.
I am.
That's exciting.
That's a DC spinoff of Suicide Squad, right?
Yeah. That was kind of, you know, it was kind of an insane project to be a part of. I got cast last year around this time, and you know, as everybody knows, it was COVID, and so basically I started shooting in January, and I'm only in like a few episodes, and I'm in like the theme song and stuff, but because I'm going from the United States to Canada, I had to quarantine for 2 weeks every time I went there. I went there three times, and every time I went there, I quarantined for 2 weeks, and then I had to do a rehearsal. So basically, I would shoot for like 1 or 2 days. So I basically would go down for a month, shoot 1 or 2 days, fly back, go back again, quarantine, do the rehearsal, be there for a month, and then come back. You know what I mean? Like, and so it was kind of a crazy. It was this whole thing is a blur. And in the middle of that, I ended up doing a movie for Netflix in Toronto, and I went to Toronto, had to quarantine there for 2 weeks. And then somebody ended up getting COVID on our set. So I had to go back into a hotel room for 2 weeks. So I'm talking to people in person is very weird for me now, because I've lived in a hotel room by myself for 3 months. So the whole situation was kind of insane, but I just saw a clip of it. The piece of Peacemaker, they released a clip at San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm excited. It looks like it's going to be funny, and I have like a little fun part. It's a blur to me. I don't remember much of it, but it was fun to watch.
And it is going to return balance to the universe. You know, Eternals gave us a brown, you know, Muslim actor from Hollywood, and now the DC world.
Yes, and I actually, because of the Peacemaker, one of the executive producers, Peter Safran, he asked me to come and be in the Shazam sequel for DC. So I'm going to be in that as well. So hopefully I'll get more DC stuff. I'm like, maybe I'm in that world. And next thing you'll see a middle-aged mustachioed superhero. I'm here for it.
Then you're going to be one of those people at the Comic-Con who's signing autographs.
Yes, inshallah.
It's going to mean the world to all the little brown kids that go to the Comic-Cons and say, wow, I can be like him. That's beautiful.
I'm going to switch a little bit in talking about, so obviously, you know, you're a pretty well-known actor now, and you did some parts like we were talking about earlier, like American Desi, where you're like you're a Muslim character.
Yeah.
In that one. And tell us a little bit about that. Like, have you played more? Have you been casted as a Muslim person? And how was that like? And when you got those kind of roles, did you feel any kind of pressure or, you know, kind of like, feeling like you kind of have some kind of responsibility to make sure that you are portraying it correctly and things like that?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting that you're mentioning, and I think my first time getting cast as a Muslim character was in American Desi. And I honestly, to be perfectly honest with you guys, I didn't think about it. I mean, I'm Muslim. I got cast and we did the movie and I never thought about it. I mean, we were doing this low budget movie and I was playing somebody who was very like, you know, I mean, not similar in personality, but like he's a Muslim guy and I'm a Muslim guy and I'm, you know, we were just doing it. And then when the movie came out, you know, there was stuff that was out of my control, right? Like there was, I think that the people who were doing the set decorations to their, you know, I mean, I don't know how to say it, but they had put the Quran in the scene upside down, and the editing of the namaz was like was clipped. So it looked wrong. Do you know what I mean? And again, it's a movie, and I personally have no control over that, right? Like maybe I should have, when I walked in, been looking at the entire set, or I should have said this is the, but that's not my job. I come in and I was like, I'm an actor and I'll say my lines, and this is the thing. And also I don't know everything, right? Like I don't know everything. So it was a very interesting experience afterwards, as much as the, you know, the movie was celebrated and the Muslim community really did support it. There were these things that ended up coming up about these, like, and why did they do this? And how could he have done that? And the blame ended up being put on me. And, you know, part of it, I accept. Maybe I should have done a better job, but what it did teach me was that I was representing the community in this situation, and it's a reality that was there. So, subsequent to that, I've been more aware of it. I have a very, a very crazy story about 24. I specifically told my, I think I might've mentioned it to you when we spoke on, when we had done that interview for the magazine that you were a part of, but I had told my agents and managers that I wasn't going to audition to play a terrorist. Like I didn't want to get the audition. I didn't want to get the roles. There was several times on Sleeper Cell as well that they had, and then I ended up getting a part which wasn't a terrorist because I said I wouldn't play it. Mm-hmm. Just for my own, because I knew, look, I go to Jamaat Khana, I don't want to be in a situation where they're like, oh, this is the guy that's perpetuating these stereotypes, right? Yeah. And so what happened with 24 was I got an audition to play Islamic studies professor. And I went in, I did the audition. The audition went really well. And what I didn't realize about 24 is that they don't actually audition you for the part that you're going to get, because everything was so secretive. So they just audition everybody with the same material, and then they offer them parts. And the part that I ended up getting offered was the bomb maker. And it was a moment where I was like, look, if I'm not auditioning for it, then I'm never going to get that opportunity. I'm never going to be faced with the financial situation, right? Like if I don't audition, they're never going to come and be like, this is how much money we're going to pay you to come and do this. And I won't be put in that situation. So I won't ever have to make that decision. But because it had happened in the opposite direction, I then was like, here's three episodes. You're going to be a guest star. This is the most money you're going to ever have that you have ever made in this. And I justified it in my head, and I ended up doing it. Do you know what I mean? And so it's a weird situation. And in a way, I sort of regret doing it. But in other ways, there was, because of that role, I ended up getting other things. Like I outsource, and the show Privilege was sore. There's an indirect line from 24 to getting that. And then because of outsource, I was able to go on to the Tonight Show and talk about being a Muslim guy with Jay Leno, which was on, which a lot of people watch. So yeah, I regret doing that role, but maybe in a weird way, that role ended up helping me to do other things that now I can, I can be supportive of the community and use my voice. So I don't know. Everything happens for a reason is what I tried to say in that little ramble.
That's an interesting.
Yeah, it's a really gray area.
I know I've listened to other interviews with, people like Cal Penn and stuff also, where they say they take these roles because they're just starting out and they need the experience, right? And then they put that on their resume, and that could lead to other bigger and better things. Yeah. Like what happened to you?
Yeah.
So what kind of advice would you give to, like, in today's world? Because now the world is a little bit different in terms of, like, everybody's very careful, everybody's PC, or most people. And so, like, what would you advise to a young actor who's happened to be a Muslim, and what would you suggest to them to do?
Yeah, look, I'm not the person who's going to be like, don't do this and don't do this and don't do that. What I will tell you, and what has helped me, is to follow your gut. I think inherently whether or not this is something that you are going to be comfortable with, that you're going to be able to do. That's the way that I have sort of dealt with everything. And again, like I told you, I may not have always made the right decision, but in the long run, it's helped me. Like even when I went, I was like, I knew my gut was telling me that I shouldn't do this, or in retrospect, I'm saying, follow your gut. You know inherently whether or not this is something that you're going to be able to do. And look, there are everybody has a different capacity of what they want to do, what they're willing to do, and that's your choice. You get to decide that. It's your life and your career. You get to decide that. I don't get to tell you what you can and cannot do, right? But follow your gut. Follow your gut, and that's the only way that I think that you can proceed.
Yeah, and I like that. There's almost like that sort of the halal haram spectrum or the halal haram ratio, and there's, you know, and the whole spectrum of it.
Absolutely.
There's room for everyone. You know, you can have like Aziz Ansari on one side eating pork on an episode, and then you have like Hasan Minhaj who will never eat pork, but he'll swear. You know. Just to make sure you feel comfortable watching it with your brown dad, he'll swear enough.
Yeah.
You know, so you have like this whole spectrum. What I'm saying.
We are a very diverse community. And it is important for us to show all aspects of our community. There is nothing wrong with that. And so, yeah, I 100% agree. There is room for all of us. There's room for every narrative, and there's room. There just needs to be more of it, right? The more we have, the more we just need more of us in the media.
So I want to talk about the Zarqa show real quick, but before we do that, because of what you just said, I'm going to skip forward to another question. I'm curious to know if you ever feel the responsibility or a weight of representing a whole identity, and if so, if that affects your work, how you portray yourself, you know, what is that dynamic?
It's such a hard question. I would be lying if I say I didn't. Like I wouldn't be lying to say that I didn't feel some sort of response. Mm-hmm. As I said, that the American Desi definitely plugged me into that. Do I think that it's going to affect my work? I think only for the better, right? I think that I realize that I have this responsibility, and I engage in the material in that way. So look, I am this person. I said, I am this person. I am a Muslim guy. I am a Muslim person. And so everything that I go into, whatever role that I go into, there is definitely that mindset. And it's, even if it's not necessarily a Muslim character, right? Like there, you decide those things, and I am that person. So it's definitely a part of me. I think the part that I I'm sorry, I ramble a lot, but the part that I am and that I feel like I'm moving forward in is that I'm trying to produce my own work. Right. So similarly to Zarqa, I have been, you know, I had a show in development at CBC, which was loosely based on, it's a comedy loosely based on the ex-mayor of Calgary, who was a Muslim guy named Nahid Nenshi. So we had loosely based our sitcom on that. And we had a development deal at CBC. Currently, I am with the producers of The Office, and we are producing a show that's loosely based on my life, which is, you know, technically a stay-at-home South Asian Muslim dad with three kids whose wife is like a corporate person. And like, what does that mean to the community, you know? So that's the way that I feel that I can broaden or do my work and take some responsibility in that way. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what.
Yeah, and I feel like we're definitely experiencing a moment right now. You know, Zarqa's coming out with her show.
Yes.
And We Are Lady Parts was amazing. Rami, you know, season
There's
three
a show called Sort Of on on HBO Max that I know Bilal. So there's a bunch of stuff that's happening as well.
Yeah, yeah, and you know that was sort of like the predecessors for that was you know Aziz Ansari, Master of None, and it was almost like because you don't want to be in your face with Islam with people, so you have Aziz Ansari with the Islam light or light Islam. And, you know, Daya Islam. And then we get into We Are Lady Parts where you have like a full on Niqabi rocker in your face with her vape, you know. So we're definitely experiencing that moment. And I feel like once you have the artist in control of the actual story, you can start telling more truths.
And I, And I think it's amazing. And we're doing it on streaming, and there is a lot of reach in streaming, but it still feels very niche. And I know everybody says that network television is dying, but I think that there is an opportunity to get that on network television, because the people that need to see it are still watching network television. You know what I mean? They're still, middle America is still watching, and they need to, as Katie Couric says, we need our Muslim Cosby show. I know Cosby is a very, that's what she said. She said, we need a Muslim Cosby show. And we do need it on network television. And hopefully that'll happen soon as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's allowing, like, even touchy topics, like we can start talking, you know, Rami's brought sex into the conversation within Muslim context. Yes. Azarka's bringing in divorce. We are Lady Parts is bringing in music, which for a lot of, you know, a long time, this is like really like
taboo. Yeah, absolutely. And now we're able to talk about it. And that's the thing. What I believe is the more representation there is, that we can talk about more things, right? When we're stuck to one or two slots, then we always have to talk about the same. Absolutely. Oh my, the honor killings. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so sick of that, right? But like that, when we have one slot, that's what they want to talk about. But when we have more slots, and we can have a diverse conversation.
Yeah, no, and I love that. I love that we're entering into this era, which I'm really excited about. And it's sort of like parallel with, you know, because we're the artistic foodie. So just talk about food real quick. Halal food's everywhere now.
Oh yeah.
It's a tag on Yelp. It's a tag on DoorDash. Like, we made it.
I know.
I mean, obviously, it's all brown guys making the app, so it was only a matter of time.
I won't out any of you guys, but I will say it for myself, is that because, you know, when I was growing up, and you're very young, but like, this wasn't a thing. So we ended up not being able to be halal, right? Like, that wasn't that wasn't an option for us. And I'm sure there's a lot of Muslim people of my generation who just want, and right now, if you're going up, there's so many options. So it can be the new thing that I can do now for my.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got all these like non-Muslims seeking out halal joints.
I know.
That's wild. That's what, you know, 20 years ago,
I think there was one in New York. So, I remember there was like this one halal Chinese food, and I wasn't halal, but it was the best Chinese food that we had. So that's what I would go.
Muslims know their meat, man. So Darda Seafood, located in Milpitas, California, has been serving halal certified and authentic Chinese food since 1995 and has long been my favorite halal Chinese food in the Bay. Come on down to Darda and enjoy some of our favorite dishes, including the chili chicken, garlic beef short ribs, Peking duck, oxtail noodle soup, and much, much more. Darda also serves dim sum on the weekends, which I have been dying to try. To accommodate your larger parties, you can also book one of their several private rooms. You can contact Darda Seafood in Milpitas at 408-433-5199. See you there.
We get some funny questions sometimes of people saying, "Oh, I want to try halal," and then they, you know, they're assuming it's only one type of cuisine. Usually, and I just recently, just a couple of days ago, I took my coworkers for lunch, just a bunch of guys, and I said, "Oh, we're gonna go to a Turkish place," and then this one older white guy who's an Italian, but he's you know, from here. He said, is it spicy? I can't handle the curries. No, it's not spicy. Turkish food is no spice. Okay.
Yeah, Islam is still a country to a lot of people. So getting into the Zarka show, so you've played many, many roles in the past, you know, some of them sort of like very typecast, you're typical, some of them not so much. So in this show, you get to play a religious scholar.
Yes.
Right. How is that compared to all your other roles that you've ever played?
You know, first and foremost, it's a really funny show. And without spoiling anything, there might be some backlash. I mean, it was like, there is some crazy stuff that happens with this imam in this show. you know, what was great about this part, and the reason I wanted to do it, is when Zarka approached me, is like, there is, he is an imam, but what we think of an imam even from media and what we're told is very specific. And this character, you know, he's born in Canada and he's very modern. And you know, there was something fun to be had there to sort of like take the imam role and just put it on its head. So that was part of it. I don't know how much I could say. I know you guys already spoke to Zarka, but I'm really excited. I hope the show goes and also look, it was for CBC Gem. So there are really mini episodes that we did. So the imam is not in a lot of it, but I'm hoping that it can be developed. And if it develops into a series on CBC or further seasons on CBC Gem, that we'll be able to see more and, you know, also, you know, take whatever you know about imams and just turn it around. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, maybe you can have your own spinoff show.
I know. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it.
the crazy imam, whatever.
I would watch the heck out of that. That sounds hilarious.
So tell us a little bit about your experience working on a show like Zarka's one, because it's a little bit different, obviously, because she's a Muslim. I'm assuming most of the people, you know, writing are very familiar with Islam and South Asian stuff. So that's completely different from what you're usually used to. So how was that experience?
Yeah, like? So... Look, I've been a big fan of Zarka. You know, she did Little Mosque on the Prairie, so I was very aware of that show. And you know, we had met once, and she said, "Look, I'm doing this show. Would you like to be a part of it?" And initially it's very hard because it was shooting in Regina, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And it was busy around here, and as I told you, I quarantined for so long that I was like, I don't know if I want to go back to Regina right now again. but then I read the script, and it's one of those things that I read, and because it's coming from her, and you know, she had writers who obviously were also not Muslim, but she is the showrunner and she's the main person. But it just felt authentic, right? Like, that's the difference. This didn't feel like I had to go in and go, guys, we would never say this. Oh, that sounds really stupid. Like, I would never walk around and be like, you know, like, there's a lot of that happens. Like, I'll get a script and I'll be like, I would never say this. Like, this is not something that I would say. So reading that and being like, oh, this actually feels real and authentic. And, you know, because of that, it also could be a little risque, because she was able to say, look, this happens and this is a real thing, that this is a possibility. So I really did. As soon as I read the script, I called her and I was like, look, I don't know how this is going to work, but I want to make it work. So if we can sort of consolidate the days and figure out how I can come in, you know, I have three small kids, so me being there for loads of amount of time is hard, but we ended up working it out. And, you know, set was amazing. There was definitely Muslim people on set, but there was also people who were not. We also had first time female directors. And so it was a very diverse set, which I have not seen. In the DP was a woman, which, you know, a lot of times that's not the case. It's very rare. So it was great. It was great to be on a set with other Muslims, diverse crew and cast. Definitely interesting and different for me than it has been.
That must have been absolutely a wild journey. I would have loved to just see.
You guys should have come to set. And
yeah, no, I mean, I would just love to see like some sort of, you know, documentary or something come out, or like a report. I know like Pillars funded a report on Hack in Hollywood. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's coming up to awareness. And that's all the stuff that people see. So hearing all this stuff from behind the scenes and how that affect, and even just the culture that, cause she was talking about, Zarka was talking about for Little Mosque on the Prairie, like when she was in the writer's room, it'd just be a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
And then her.
I'm sure.
You know, and that stuff people don't see because it's behind the scenes. So to see the transformation of that is really fascinating.
And look, I empathize with her because I'm sure it was hard, because again, she's the one who has the, she was the one, it was her source material and it was her knowledge, right?
Yeah.
But we still have to then go and have to fight on the back end. So I empathize with what she went through. But I'm, you know, in that, again, everything happens for a reason. And there's, I'm sure she learned a lot about the business and how things work. And now she's got this, and hopefully this will be a, you know, a hit, and, you know, it'll all work out, I hope.
Yeah, inshallah. So leading into a little bit more of the Muslim actor identity, and this is, you know, this is something that, so as Irfan mentioned, I have a nonprofit called Gathering All Muslim Artists for the last 5 years. It's just been about supporting artists where they're at and helping them to get to where they need to be, instead of sort of prescribing like a route or, you know, this is what a Muslim artist should be. And, you know, this, I'm going to be honest with you. It's been a journey that's, it's made me sort of question and inquire a lot of my own beliefs and sort of stereotypes and so on. And one big thing is this almost like cognitive dissonance of like, when I'm going through my life, am I going through it as me or as a Muslim? When I find myself in a social situation, do I, you know, they talk about the white gaze. There's also just the non-Muslim gaze. Like, am I in this moment acting as a representative of the faith of the entire faith of Islam, and I must have prophetic manners, or am I just acting as me and allowed to be a little pissed off or frustrated in that, in whatever situation, right? So, I mean, this is a little bit of cognitive dissonance that I go through. Of course, you know, post 9/11, this was forced on us, right? It's like, and it wasn't just forced on us, it was forced on Sikh people too, just because they had the turban on. It's like, hey, now you have to represent an entire faith that you don't even belong to, right? So just sort of digging into that, I know we're getting a little bit philosophical, like, is your Muslim identity a really big deal and central to your life and something that you hold all the time, or is it, you know, just another aspect of the bigger picture of who you are? And you can speak in the context of daily life, but also as you know, in your profession as well.
I think it is. And I think that there's, at least for me, there's no way for it not to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm very cognizant of it. As you said, even we are human beings. I get pissed off, you know, sometimes irrationally, sometimes I'm at fault. We get into we get into situations in public, and yes, it always is that thing is like, do I want that image now to be like angry Muslim guy, right? Like, and I do think about it. I do go, you know, we're also out. I have three kids. Sometimes I'm yelling at them because they're not listening to me. But what is that? What is the view that I get being this guy doing that? Whereas it would be a different image if it was a white dad doing it to his, you know, to So I do. I think about this I don't know how I don't do that. So it is a big part of my life, and you know, I would say in the business as well, right? Like as I mentioned, it's the work that the work that I'm putting forward. It clearly is on my mind. Everything that I have developed and been trying to pitch, and it has to do somehow around a South Asian Muslim guy. And the bottom line is, because that's who I am, I can't take that away from myself. Right? Like, that's what it is. There's no option. So I live through it on a daily basis because that's who I am. That's what people see, and that's what I am. So there's no way around it.
It's kind of like you can't turn it off, right?
You can't, right? It's that same thing. Like, in a weird way, I'll bring it back to the business. There was a lot of talk like several years ago. They were like, well, we just want to be the minorities, right? They were like, we want to play Jack on. We just want to be considered the same as white people. And there's a difference between having roles that are open to us. But I don't necessarily look. When I present on a TV show, I still am brown. I still look like the way that I look. I don't want you to be like, oh, this is not the situation, right? Like, there's no way to hide that part of me. And I don't want to do that. I want to be proud of what I am. So there's a different part with having different representation and opening up to then just being like, well, Riz just wants to be Jack Smith. That's a different
race blindedness, completely other side of the spectrum.
That's it, right? Yeah, I am this guy. And I want to be proud of this guy, and I want you to see this guy, right?
No, that's a good point. One thing that kind of annoys me on TV is when the person is obviously Indian person and his name is Chris or something. I mean, although there is Indian people like that, you know, like, but you know, it's not like.
And look, I'm okay with it to a certain extent. I look, if you're gonna add anything to it, let's not delete identity. Right, like let's not do that. There's no problem. Look, sometimes it's not necessary on procedural shows like Law and Order and NCIS. Like maybe that's not necessary. You're like, hey, this guy just came in. He's a lawyer. I don't need to know everything.
He's a Muslim lawyer specifically.
But when there is an opportunity to do it, don't shy away from it. Right? Let's not shy away from it.
Well, there was a good story, real quick, kind of related to that. You know, Riz Ahmed, he got cast as for that HBO show. I forgot the name of it now. Into the Night or something like that.
I know what you're talking about.
And originally the story was written as a white person, I believe, a taxi driver. It wasn't specific to, but when he got cast, then they said, hey, let's use his religion and ethnicity and culture and put it into the story. And it made it much more vibrant and interesting because now he's, you know, it shows a little bit about he's a Pakistani immigrant and a little bit of religion in there. His parents are strict and all. So, you know, sometimes these things are important to include and not just blanket white person.
Yeah. Right? No, and that's the thing is like, look, there's and people are yearning for this. We know this economic wise, like the business is there. People want to hear different stories. They want to hear, they're open to hearing a diverse story. So why not give them what they need, right? Like it's working, so why not?
Yeah, and I think truth actually does come across, even if it's not a factual truth, if it's an emotional truth, if it's an experiential truth, and people can point at the screen and say, wow, me too. And that makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
And I imagine this shows up differently for different actors as well. For instance, Dave Chappelle doesn't have to act as the Muslim comedian.
That's right.
You know, but he can't turn off being the black comedian though, right?
That's right. That's right.
You know, there's a lot of different things that you can turn off, turn on, like the people having to be introduced as a female doctor instead of a doctor because, oh, let's highlight that aspect of it, you know. Yeah. For example, I think of like Mahershala Ali, who has a Muslim identity, but when you see him on screen, like I think that his black identity comes first before his Muslim identity.
I'm sure because that's what we see, right?
Exactly.
But then there's a way to, I'm sure, and he's also, he's doing so much. So there's ways in different, and not in every project, right? It doesn't have to be in every project.
Exactly.
Our project where that's highlighted and you see that. So
yeah, precisely. I think with Rami, we got to see a side of him that it was really special, you know, and talking to some people that know him in real life, they're like, yeah, this is how he shows up. Like this, he's just very graceful, spiritual, you know? So, you know, it's really interesting to see sort of like how that plays out, where you can turn off, where you can't turn off, and just sort of the racialization of Islam as like this brown and Arab thing. However, on one hand, you know, I think that a lot of Arabs can pass as white, and so they sometimes have an option of turning that off and on again. You know, Moammer in his recent Netflix special, he's talking about, he's like, I'm always Palestinian American until I'm going to buy a gun. In that case, I'm white.
Oh my Lord.
I haven't seen that yet.
I'm just plugging all the Muslim actors I know. In this episode.
You're very much in the know.
This one will be a little bit different since we talk about food a lot in our podcast. So you wanted to see, and I don't want to be stereotypical here, you know, because I personally don't cook myself, but Abbas does. I like to eat. You know? But so do you, what do you do at home? Do you cook for your kids or do you, what's your deal?
So me and my wife, unfortunately, both do not cook. She doesn't burn out. She does for the kids little things here and there. So we are a family that does eat out a lot. And then, you know, my mom lives in Vancouver, but she comes down a lot. And then when she's here, the kids don't want to eat out. They just want to eat her food all the time. But we are, it's probably the worst answer you're going to get. We're not. Like, the funny thing is, you know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, growing up, it's so funny. I love Indian food now, but I hated it when I was growing up because my mom would force it. Like, that would be every day. I was like, I don't want to eat this. I don't want you to send me this kind of food to school. Like, it smells. I was just very much like, you know, it was that thing growing up. And now my kids, because they don't have any of those, like, they're like, we just want to eat it every day. We don't even know how to make it. We can't make it. They want to eat it. Whenever they want to go to a restaurant, they're like, we want to go to an Indian restaurant. I'm like, who are you kids?
Wow.
I was like, I don't understand.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, you know, I always complain about how my kids eat on the show sometimes. They don't want to do anything with any kind of spice, or they're just like plain. Like, but the funny thing is when they were, you know, babies, we used to stuff them with the desi food, you know, and they used to eat it and they used to like it. But then when they got older, they just eat the chicken nuggets, the halal ones that we, and then, you know, Al Safa on Saffron Road and all those ones. And then, just plain cheese pizza, macaroni and cheese. Like, that's it. It's like plain stuff. It's like, what? And now we have such a diverse options, especially for halal. So we bring home, like, you know, Thai food and halal Mexican food and all these other things that we didn't have and I didn't have. They don't want to eat it. It's like, what the heck?
See, Mike, is a spice, it's the same thing. They're still... They don't want it. They'll want to eat the Indian food, but it has to still either has to be mild, or they'll just take a tub of yogurt and just put it all. So I'm like, what are you eating? Because if it's too spicy, they're just gonna like smother it.
Oh no!
you're like, I can't. It's killing me right now.
Meanwhile, I need like an extra hari mirch on the side. Like, that's mandatory. If I don't get heartburn after, I didn't enjoy the meal. But I don't know, Irfan. I think maybe your kids will grow out of that phase and they'll get into like the karate
stuff. Inshallah.
You know, we've Rizwan, Irfan and I have collaborated. I think it was in 2020 when everyone was at home and it was the first Ramadan in the pandemic, and it was just such a weird experience. So we put out, I think it's like 6 or 7 of my cooking videos. So, you know, if you go on YouTube, not a lot of views, but it's out there. You can learn how to make chicken kadai, pindi masala, you know, beef samosas. Yeah. I went full desi with that. I got a faluda and a kulfi recipe out there.
You know what? Maybe I need to do it. Maybe I need to do a series of me trying to do it and completely messing it up. That'll be a series of me and my wife trying to follow these instructions and completely making it.
That'd be, and then cut to Irfan's 2 kids just killing it in the kitchen, making a superb dish, you know.
No, see, it's funny you brought up the YouTube, because that's what my kids only watch. YouTube for some reason. They don't like, I used to like cartoons and movies, and they don't like it.
Everything's on the tablet.
Except for Star Wars, because I kind of brainwashed them for Star
Wars.
That's good. but the YouTube, this crazy stuff that these people are making, like young kids are making so much money from there. So that's like another option for people, if, you know, who are interested in media, right? They can make their own kind of YouTube show.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole, I mean, right now there's creators on TikTok that are, you know, I'm doing a movie right now where the star is a TikTok creator, and he's fantastic. It takes creativity to do that. I mean, I don't know how you get 11 million followers on TikTok. I don't know how that happens. I tried to do one video on TikTok. It was completely terrible. And I was like, I can't do this anymore.
So you're in Toronto. You're based in Toronto now.
I am in Los Angeles.
You're in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay. Just for the sake of the audience who's listening in Los Angeles, are there any restaurants that come to your mind? You're like, wow, okay, this is amazing. You have to check it out on your next trip there. Or
yes.
Any restaurant you endorse fully?
There is so many restaurants. I'll tell you what. If you're looking for Indian food, there's an Indian vegetarian place called Annapurna, which is Culver City. I'm a big fan of it. They have dosas. And my son, again, who is spice deficient, as your kids are, but he actually is fine with that. He will eat. It's spicy, and he eats it, and he's okay. So he's been asked. We haven't gone in a bit because we don't live close to Culver City, but we've been meaning to go. But their dosas are really good. And then, you know, I will always – my favorite sushi place, Sugarfish, is like my favorite restaurant in Los Angeles.
Now, what about in Canada, which – were you in you're not in Toronto, right?
I was raised in I was born in Toronto, raised in Calgary.
Okay.
And my parents now live in Vancouver. I'm going to tell you, in Canada, if you're in Vancouver, my favorite restaurant that I have to go all the time, it's African Indian food. It's called Jumbo Grill. It's on Kingsway. If you're there, you need to go. You need to order it. You need to order the mogo. I don't know if you guys have had mogo. Yes. A lot of
I was born in Nairobi. I'm a Kenyan. Born in
Nairobi. Okay. Because I say mogo to people, and they're like, what is mogo?
Yeah.
Pili-pili mogo with the sauce and the
spice. Oh my God. I'm about that life. Let's go. I was raised on kukupaka, mandazi, mahamri.
Yes.
Maharagwe, all of that.
So you need to go to that restaurant because it's that kind of food, right?
Okay. Oh. I might go to Vancouver just to get that.
Like drive up there.
Guess
I drove once before kids. Me and my wife drove from San Jose
to
Vancouver. It took us 18 hours.
Oh, wow. It's
but it's a nice drive.
Emphasis on before kids, because road trips. We just got back from LA. We did, you know, we stopped in Monterey for a night, Pismo Beach for a night. You know, we did sort of like the slow drive down and then the quick drive up. And I've got a 14-month-old.
Oh my Lord! Why? Why do you do this to yourself?
So if it wasn't for the pacing on the way down, it would have been impossible. You know, no more than like two hours of driving in a day. That's her limit, you know.
Gotta stop with the kids, yeah.
But I only travel to eat, really. So I just ate my way down the coast of California, got my charga chicken from Charga House, got my Wagyu halal hi-ho cheeseburger, and I'm set, you know what I mean? There's this new halal, actually, I think the only halal Caribbean joint in all of California, Cecilia's in downtown LA.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Oh, their jerk chicken is incredible. Wow. Their oxtail just falls off.
Now I'm like, it's lunchtime. Now I'm like, I need to eat now. is it in San Francisco or near the university? Zareen's.
People were like,
you have to go to Zareen's. You have to go to Zareen's. So we went to Zareen's. It was good.
Well, hit us up next time you're up in time to send you a little Facebook request. Definitely. And there's so much good stuff here. You know, you have your ICANN barbecue in Irvine, which is like the closest thing to a pilgrimage that we get in the U.S. All Bay Area people are like, oh, we're going to L.A. We got to try this halal Korean barbecue. But you know what? We got a lot of stuff up here in the Bay Area. Hit us up.
Oh, yeah.
For some little hot pot or some Thai food.
I'm ready.
Come through. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate
it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. You're a funny guy. The hour has gone by so fast.
Thank you guys so much. We'll chat soon.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Artistic Foodies. Before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Be sure to find us on Facebook and Instagram to stay tuned for more episodes as well as bonus content. You can also have access to all of our episodes at theartisticfoodies.com.
This podcast has been brought to you by Halal Fest Incorporated and Gamma, Gathering All Muslim Artists.